Welcome to the conference call with Yossi Alfer. This is Ori Ner from Washington. We will soon start as soon as Yossi joins us.
I'm with you. This is Yossi.
Hi, Yossi. Thanks for joining us. We'll wait just one more minute until it's 3 o'clock, which is the official time of the beginning of the call, and then we'll start. And thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
So again, this is Ori Ner from Washington with Americans for Peace Now. We are about to start our briefing call with Yossi Alfer, who's joining us from Israel. He's already on the line. We're just waiting for everyone to join us, and we'll start promptly at 3 o'clock. I'll just give it another few seconds for people to join, and we'll start promptly. For people who are joining us now, this is Ori Ner from Washington with Americans for Peace Now. We will, in just a few seconds, start our briefing call with Yossi Alfer. Yossi is already on the line with us, and just waiting for people to join, and we will start. All right, so this is Ori Ner with Americans for Peace Now. Welcome to our APN briefing call with Yossi Alfer. Yossi is joining us from Israel. Those who don't know him personally probably know him from reading his weekly analysis on APN's website, Hard Questions, Tough Answers, or from Bitter Lemons, the Bitter Lemons web-based magazine, which he co-edits with his Palestinian colleague, Ghassan Al-Khatib. Yossi was a senior intelligence analyst at the IDF and the Mossad, and then the director of Tel Aviv University's Jaffe Center for Strategic Studies. Before we start, two housekeeping comments. I would like to remind you that we will have a recording of this talk. However, because of the weekend and the holiday that follows, we may not be able to send it promptly. We may be able to send it only next week, about mid-next week. So please bear with us, and our apologies for the delay. Also, for all the participants in the call are at the moment muted. Once we shift to Q&A mode, we will tell you what to do in order to unmute yourselves and ask a question, and we ask that you remute yourself. I'll tell you how to do it later, and that when you're unmuted, once you are once others can hear you, that you reduce or avoid any kind of background noises. Good. So, Yossi, I'd like to start actually with a question about the news of the day, which was published just after President Obama's departure from Israel in the midst of a dust storm. By the way, a dust storm, if I understand correctly, that totally ruined all of the Passover cleaning of Israelis before the holiday starts. But it turns out that President Obama succeeded in something that he's been trying to do for a long time, which is getting Prime Minister Netanyahu to do what was needed, including an apology to Prime Minister Erdogan of Turkey, in order to put Israel-Turkey relations back on track. So maybe start with that, and then we'll talk about what else President Obama succeeded to achieve in his trip and what he did not. So the floor is yours, Yossi. Thank you.
Well, thank you, and good afternoon, everyone. Yes, I was planning to start with the breakthrough with regard to Turkey. In any case, it's clearly beyond all of the good vibes that came from this visit. This is clearly the one only, at least first, really concrete positive outcome that came out of the visit. And conversation between Netanyahu and Erdogan, an Israeli apology, the content of which was agreed a year or two ago in negotiations sponsored by the UN, an agreement to the Turks to drop legal claims. There'll be some compensation for the 9 Turks who were killed on the Mavi Marmara in May 2010. Ambassadors will be exchanged again, and implicitly a degree of strategic cooperation between Israel and Turkey will be renewed against the backdrop of what's happening in Syria. let me add here that while this was clearly intended by Netanyahu to be credited to Obama and his visit, if you've been reading my Q&A, you know that months ago I predicted that after the elections and Netanyahu formed a new government, this would happen, because I heard it from Netanyahu's people in the prime minister's office in Jerusalem, that basically they were waiting, that basically Netanyahu felt he couldn't offer this apology at election time. He'd be too open to criticism of a political nature that would hurt him. It was also helpful to him to have moved Avigdor Lieberman out of the foreign ministry, if only temporarily, because Lieberman was very strongly against this apology. Lieberman, incidentally, has already published a statement condemning the apology and the agreement as somehow demeaning Israel's stature. But clearly Netanyahu was planning to do this. When the Obama visit came along, this was the perfect opportunity to work this in to and credit Obama for it within the broadest strategic context. And this brings me to the second point, and that is that while this breakthrough between Israel and Turkey is the big immediate news coming out of the visit, it's extremely important to understand, particularly with what I'm going to say about Iran and the Palestinian issue, and I'm sure you have plenty of questions about both, important to understand that from the standpoint of the Israeli security community, Syria is the pressing issue right now. What we are witnessing in Syria is truly momentous in terms of the history of the Middle East over centuries, not over years, but over centuries. We're witnessing the collapse of the post-Ottoman Levant state system created by the British and the French nearly 100 years ago, and the Turkey dissolving into what a very astute Egyptian statesman who passed away just a few years ago, Tahsin Bashir, called, when he looked around the entire Middle East other than Egypt, dissolving into tribes with flags. And it's not just Syria dissolving into tribes with flags. Did I say Turkey? I'm sorry, I meant Syria. Not just Syria, but potentially dragging with it Iraq, Lebanon, which is increasingly being dragged into the fighting, and threatening Jordan's security as well. It's no accident that Obama went from here to Jordan. Yes, he'll talk to Jordan about the Palestinian issue. They could conceivably host talks again. But again, the burning issue is Syria. We have news coming out of Jordan in the last few days that the U.S. has set up camps to train no fewer than 15,000 Syrian rebels into a kind of army, non-Islamist, non-extremist army, and begin to infiltrate them back into Syria. There are rumors about Israeli drones flying along the Jordanian-Syrian border and sharing the intelligence with the Jordanians. Netanyahu has met extraordinarily twice in recent months with King Abdullah II. If you read Jeffrey Goldberg's interview with King Abdullah in The Atlantic, and I recommend you read it, it's fascinating reading, never mind that the king has already said it's distorted and inaccurate and so forth, you will see a lot of praise for Israel there and a lot of recognition of the need for Jordanian-Israel strategic cooperation, particularly vis-a-vis Jordan. So I want to emphasize that behind the scenes, this was the heaviest issue. This was clearly the heaviest issue. Now, to recapitulate the visit, what I think happened here, President Obama was extraordinarily well-prepared, knowledgeable, likable. Every movement, every word was choreographed very cleverly by people who know Israel well, including all of the Hebrew expressions he worked into this. He made Netanyahu his friend. He showed Israel he loves us. He erased all the bad impressions left by the Cairo speech of June 2009 by talking about our 3,000-year-old roots, emphasizing the security issue that we're not alone. His remarks today at Yad Vashem that Israel was not created because of the Holocaust, but Israel will prevent another Holocaust, were clearly meant to dispel the impression left by the Cairo speech that Israel was created because of the Holocaust and not because of its roots in the region and not because of the Zionist movement. His speech, to a group of students handpicked by the American embassy, in terms of what it said about the Israeli-Palestinian issue, it could have been written by Americans for Peace Now. I don't know, Ori, maybe you read it. Maybe you wrote it. I don't know.
You're absolutely right. But, and in fact, I have to say, Yossi, Deborah just sent out a letter that some of our participants may have already received in their inbox. And we say there, she says there, that this was in many ways a Peace Now speech. So you're absolutely right.
It put Obama in the camp, the very small camp in this Knesset, of Tzipi Livni and her Hatnuah party and of Meretz. In terms of what he had to say, and he said it so beautifully that it undoubtedly moved a lot of Israelis. Now, it's debatable whether that's going to have any lasting impression at all. It's debatable whether it was the best move to give this speech to a group of handpicked students rather than to give it to the Knesset, even though he might have been risking some boos or walkouts, because the audience he picked does not represent the Israeli political scene as understood in the Knesset by the recent election, and the Knesset itself, freshly elected, it can't be accused of being not democratic. As I said, barely 10% of it is really oriented to this peace process he talked about as the most important issue. And Obama's call on the Israeli public to pressure its government, it's debatable whether this will have any influence as well, and I'll come back to this in a moment. Obama's reception by the Palestinians stood out negatively in very sharp contrast to his reception in Israel. Abu Mazen stood on the same stage with him and said, and Obama did not say, "I insist on a settlement freeze," because he learned a lesson from the previous one. And Abu Mazen basically said, "No settlement freeze, no negotiations." There were demonstrations against him in and around Ramallah and Bethlehem, something that didn't happen at all in Israel. And I wouldn't call this a failure, but it certainly stands out in the sense that if John Kerry's task now, and he's coming back here tomorrow night from Amman to begin to talk about an Israeli-Palestinian peace process, if his task is to get the two parties together on something, he'll find a Netanyahu who will be more flexible and more forthcoming, at least at the tactical level, and I say only tactical, given the fact that his government is essentially once again a settler government, and in many ways with even stronger emphasis on the settler element in it. But it's debatable, it's questionable whether he'll find Palestinians more forthcoming on this or not. What will Kerry be doing? What will be the follow-through on the Palestinian issue? To what extent will Obama really commit his presidency to this? We simply don't know. There's a lot of speculation here, and the speculation centers on some sort of new American approach. That is to say, the assumption is Kerry will not just repeat Leon Panetta's statement of a couple of years ago, "Just get back to the damn table." In other words, the same order of business that you've been talking about for the last 20 years under the Oslo Accords. But he may try to begin with confidence building measures, and there were a lot of rumors in the weeks building up to the Obama visit that Israel was and the Palestinians were being asked to carry out some confidence building measures. Israel, release of prisoners, transfer of funds, perhaps transferring some parts of the Area C in the West Bank to the Palestinian Authority. The Palestinian Authority resolving declaring it won't go back to the United Nations, and it will negotiate openly. That may be one tack. Another area of a lot of the rumor mill is that Kerry will focus on roadmap phase two, meaning settlement, some kind of settlement freeze, partial Israeli withdrawal, recognition of a Palestinian state with temporary borders and American guarantees with regard to final status, something which the Palestinians have until now rejected. And I would throw one other idea into the rumor mill, and this is something I also picked up from the Prime Minister's office prior to the elections, and that is that after the elections, we would be hearing something from Netanyahu about an Israeli readiness to discuss more seriously the Arab Peace Initiative. The Arab Peace Initiative from March 2002, which basically says normalization of relations with Israel in return for withdrawal and solving all the issues, including the refugee issue with the Palestinians. It will be interesting. I think it's conceivable we may see some initiative from Netanyahu to try to bring additional Arab states into the circle of peace. And here the emphasis would be on the Saudis in order to give Netanyahu the kind of reassurances he would need to make any kind of concessions whatsoever. That's pure speculation on my part. And we have to summarize the Palestinian issue after the Obama visit by saying, objectively speaking, the gaps between Netanyahu ideologically and the coalition he has created, despite the presence of Tzipi Livni and the fact that she has the peace process portfolio, but the gap between Netanyahu and his coalition on the one hand and the PLO, PA, Abu Mazen and his position on the other, given the split between Fatah and Hamas, between the West Bank and Gaza, the gap is still huge, number one. And number two, coming away from this visit, looking at what has happened in it and what the principals have said and where Obama went from here, that is to Jordan, I would say that in American-Israeli relations, which have certainly been placed on a new high and very welcome level, the issues of Iran and Syria have higher priority, and they're going to have higher priority in the weeks and months ahead than the Palestinian issue. How that's going to be translated into actual words and deeds, we'll wait and see. And I think with that, I'll conclude my remarks and open the floor to your questions.
Great. Thank you, Yossi. I'm going to shift now to Q&A mode. It'll take me just a couple of seconds, and then I will tell you what to do in order to unmute yourself and ask a question. So just bear with me. Okay, so we're now in Q&A mode, which means that you can unmute yourself to ask a question. In order to do that, you have to punch star six on your phone. You will then unmute yourself and be able to ask a question. Please introduce yourself when you do that. And please, I really ask you that after you ask your question, you punch star six again to mute yourself so we don't have background noises for the rest of the call. So first question. Star six.
Gregory.
Yes.
Gregory Law.
Go ahead, please.
Okay. How about suggesting the following, that on the settlements, the declaration that the settlements will stop and the negotiations from the other side are accepted happen instantly at the same time. So there's no precondition It all happens at once.
Well, Gregory, there's no direct relation between your question and the Obama visit unless this issue was discussed very privately. So you're getting into speculation about where some sort of negotiation process could begin, how it would begin. You're suggesting a kind of mutual confidence-building measure, which is one of the ideas I brought up. But beyond that, I simply I don't want to start getting into a discussion of let's build a peace process together and how should it work. So I think I'll just leave it at that.
Let me just add, this is Ori from Washington. There was a report today, this evening, Israel time, on Channel 2 saying that there's some kind of an understanding, unofficial understanding, between Israel and the U.S., and not clear what the Palestinian view is on this, that there will be a practical freeze outside of settlement blocks in order to facilitate Israeli-Palestinian negotiations. But again, that's more of a rumor or speculation than real hard news. So do we
Ori,
have another question?
I just watched...
Yes.
Ori, are you with me?
Yeah. Please go ahead.
Ori?
Yes.
I just watched Channel 2 News an hour ago, and that was not mentioned.
Oh. So I may be... It's
so
maybe,
I
it may have been on a different channel.
It may have died
channel.
Already. I don't know.
Okay. Never mind that. All right. So let's take
Hi.
Another question, please.
Frank Bamberger.
Hi.
You mentioned as a confidence building measure prisoner swaps. I've heard a really preposterous idea, and I'd like your comments, even though it seems preposterous. A swap of Marwan Barghouti against the Yonatan.
Pollard,
exactly. You want to comment?
Well, the only thing I would say is that on the eve of the visit, Obama, again, Channel 2, Israel, interviewed on Channel 2, was asked about Jonathan Pollard and said flat out, this is not on the agenda now. He is subject to the usual review and parole process and so on and so forth. And basically said, I, as president, am not involved in this. And we let our penal system deal with it according to its rules. Having said that, with the exception of, I think, a heckler or two at the speech he gave to students, and with the exception of one or two of Netanyahu's new ministers, who, when in the receiving line on the red carpet when Obama arrived and was introduced to each one of them and proved to be incredibly well-informed about every single one of them. But one or two of them said, Mr. President, free Pollard, and Obama ignored it. And we didn't hear any more about it because he said straight out, and he said very pointedly before this whole visit began, this is not on the agenda. So I would say, in that sense, no sort of prisoner swap is on the agenda, unless he was deceiving us, and I kind of doubt it, because his position on Pollard has been consistent with that of the, for better or for worse, with that of his predecessors and with that of the Department of Justice and the and most of the security establishment in the United States. And he took it off the agenda, and as far as I know, in his talks with Netanyahu and with Peres, it stayed off the agenda.
What about Marwan Barghouti? Is he on the agenda?
Well, if there's no swap, the question of Marwan Barghouti comes up at different times. The release, what Abu Mazen and the Fatah establishment are asking for as an Israeli confidence building gesture is the release not of Marwan Barghouti, but the release of those Palestinians who were incarcerated for terrorism prior to the Oslo Agreement. In other words, they've been 20 years or more in jail, and there are over 100 of them growing old in jail. Now, Netanyahu, like his predecessors, has resisted this because every one of these 100 or more people has a file of some atrocity committed against Israelis, killing people, And the minute you talk about releasing them, the families of those people are up in arms, and this turns into a hot political hot potato. They go to the high court. It's politically difficult. Now, having said that, it's easier for Netanyahu to make this gesture now when elections are behind him. He doesn't have to worry about new elections, at least not in the coming months, year or two at least. And so it'll be easier to handle the public flack. He did, after all, release people in return for Gilad Shalit that his predecessor, Ehud Olmert, had not been prepared to release. And he managed it rather well in terms of the public reaction. But these are veteran prisoners, not Barghouti. Bear in mind also that there are always hints being sent from Abu Mazen that he's not interested in Barghouti getting out because Barghouti is a political opponent. Barghouti will vie for Abu Mazen's leadership position. If there's going to be a request for Barghouti's release, it would come from Abu Mazen if he's clearly retiring and before a successor has been appointed, because that successor won't want Barghouti released either because of his tremendous popularity. Having said that, I think it's important to notice when Barghouti is released, and assuming he goes into Palestinian politics, his popularity rating will go down in the nitty-gritty of politics, and there's absolutely no guarantee that he would be seen by Palestinians or Israelis as some kind of great white hope for the peace process. This is a man who did, in the end, sponsor terrorism against Israeli civilians, and there's absolutely no knowing what his position would be if he were released and what his prestige would be.
Thank you very much. That's very helpful.
This is
I think I heard Frank Bamberger. Do you want to go ahead, Frank?
All right.
Hello.
I'm done.
Okay. Next question.
This is Matthew Weinstein. My question is, do you think we might see a bumper sticker come out of this? I remember when President Clinton went to Israel, the bumper sticker that came out was Shalom Chaver. With President Obama using so much Hebrew, perhaps Anachnu Lo Levad or some other bumper sticker?
Certainly Atem Lo Levad, you're not alone. It's interesting that you mention it, because when I heard that, I said, that's going to resonate like Shalom Chaver. We may see a bumper sticker. Again, is that going to change something in the basic facts of the divide between Israelis and Palestinians? Permit me to be skeptical.
Okay, next question.
This is Steve Rohde in Los Angeles. What can Jews in America do who love the Israeli people and what Israel originally stood for, vis-a-vis Obama here in America, to reinforce him and also to reinforce the peace movement in Israel?
Well, certainly Obama's performance here, which is, as I said, was stellar, is going to, I think, give him more maneuvering room in American politics, on anything related to Israel, whether it's the Iran issue or the Palestinian issue. And I'm thinking vis-a-vis Congress, for example, and particularly the Republican majority in the House, and those in Congress who try to introduce resolutions basically encouraging Israel to go to war with Iran. It seems to me Obama will have a much easier time now dealing with this. And the real question is, with regard to the Israeli-Palestinian, with regard to the Iranian issue, he has an agenda. He has a very clear game plan and a very clear agenda. He made it clear to Netanyahu while it was clear from everything they said that there are still differences between them as to where the red lines are. It was also clear that Obama got his way and Netanyahu is going to step aside and let the U.S. Strategy vis-a-vis Iran move ahead. So I don't think there's any need to pressure on this issue. But on the Israeli-Palestinian issue, Obama took a leadership position, but he also said, you Israelis have to want this more than anybody else. You have to pressure your government. And the question is, does this mean that the administration is not going to take any initiative? I don't think so, because we know that Kerry is interested and is cooking some sort of initiative. I don't know what that initiative is, but if it's a good initiative, and if it's an innovative one, and if it's one that builds on the goodwill that Obama has created in Israel, this is something the American Jewish community should get behind and support and try to make sure that the administration doesn't back away the minute it runs into flak from Israel or Palestinians or anybody else. And that's very likely to be the situation, of course, depending on what Kerry has to offer.
Thank you, Yossi. Next question? Do we have another question for Yossi Alfer regarding President Obama's visit to Israel?
No question. I have a comment to the last Gregory Lowe again.
Please go ahead, Greg.
I've noticed a very interesting phenomenon among some of my friends who've always been on the fence since this movie The Gatekeepers came out. And a lot of people who saw that movie about the six leaders of Shin Bet, a lot of people who saw that were very impressed by their point. I wonder if this is something that people know in Israel as well.
The Gatekeepers is a big hit in Israel. A lot of people have seen it and continue to see it, and it certainly, there's a lot of talk about it. It's also an issue of debate within the Israeli foreign ministry. You have Netanyahu said, I didn't see it. You have the ambassador in Washington, the Israeli ambassador in Washington, who did see it and was very critical about it. And then you have a lot of other Israeli diplomats who are apparently taking a different tack and trying to find some favorable points in it. My sense is this. First of all, I saw the movie. I have known personally five of the six Shin Bet heads who talk there. I've spoken with them over the years, over 40 years. I've spoken with them privately. Nothing they said surprised me. Nothing they said surprised me. Perhaps the only surprising thing from my standpoint was the most veteran head, Avram Shalom, who toward the end, you know, compared our occupation to the German occupation and really went out on a limb. He's the only one of the six without any conceivable political ambitions, and he allowed himself to speak a little more freely than the others. But nothing surprised me here. And from my point of view, the positive aspect of this film is that the state of Israel, with its poor political leadership, and all six of these guys make that point, the state of Israel with its poor political leadership appointed these six and appointed pretty enlightened people to run our internal security service. And that's a point that I think should be made to Israel's detractors. Find us another country in a situation of almost constant war that appoints people like this, liberals, to run their security services. People who are able to talk this way, and I can guarantee you they said these things to the prime ministers privately. They said them in conversations. They said them with their colleagues. They never said them publicly until now, although some of them, like Ami Ayalon, have been saying them publicly. That, to my mind, is the positive point of this movie. Obviously, the negative point is that these guys have been making these assessments, and these assessments have been ignored by the political echelon of Israel, which has consistently, left, right, center, botched the Palestinian issue and not followed the advice of the heads of its security services. That all that makes for a good debate, but it doesn't have to be one in which Israel gets only negatives, because there is a positive aspect to this, at least from my point of view. I don't know if you folks think that that would fly in discussions in America of this movie or not.
Thank you, Yossi. This is Ori. I just wanted to add that our next briefing call, God willing, Be'ezrat Hashem, as my grandfather used to say, will be with the maker, with the director of The Gatekeeper, is Dror Moreh. We're in touch with him, and he's agreed to brief us. We're just not quite sure yet about the date and the time. We're still talking to him, but it'll probably be a week after next. So stay tuned. We'll send out an invitation to that. I think it's a wonderful movie. I think it's extremely important to anyone who's interested in our issues. Very important movie. Do we have any more questions?
I have a question. This is Steve Kaplan from Los Angeles. Yossi, this may be premature, but do you see any evidence of any shifting on the right wing of the Israeli spectrum that is acting more cautiously because they don't feel they have sort of carte blanche support from the United States like they may have felt during the Bush administration and may have been uncertain during the first 4 years of the Obama administration because it sort of was relatively inactive. Do you think that Obama's speech will change anything or cause any reconsideration on the right wing?
I doubt it very much. Unless the Obama administration, and I don't expect this to happen, Obama didn't in any way hint at this, but the only circumstance in which this might happen is if the Obama administration exercised really far-reaching pressure on Israel, which would force people like Netanyahu and others who are on the right, who recognize the importance of the American connection, to back down and say, well, we've got to make difficult choices. But, I mean, quite the contrary. You saw Obama, during this visit, actually committing to begin now working to extend American security aid to Israel from 2017 on. You saw the visit to the Iron Dome set up, and the pledges that despite sequestration, American financial support for this would continue. So I don't think this happening. Now, I don't see this happening. Now, the right wing, or let's say the settler right wing of this government, which is represented in considerable numbers both in the Likud and beyond, in of course, in the Jewish Home Party, all 12 of its members of Knesset are fanatically pro-settler, and its head Naftali Bennett has a program that can for the West Bank that can only be called apartheid. These people represent a point of view which is growing in Israel. The West Bank question is over. There can't be a two-state solution. There won't be a two-state solution. And the only question is how much of the territory Israel will hold on to while giving the Palestinians some sort of restricted autonomy that the rest of the world will call apartheid. And that we can, quote-unquote, get away with it. The world will not treat us like South Africa because look at what's going on around us. All of the chaos. And some of these people will take heart from this visit that Obama is going to support us no matter what. After all, he said it's up to you guys to decide what kind of country you want to be. Well, these people are not in the least bit perturbed by the notion that the occupation is eating away at the moral fiber of Israel. By the notion that we may continue for a long time to come to be seen as the lords of the Palestinians in the West Bank. They're not perturbed by this. This is if you look at the structure of this coalition, and you can only blame Netanyahu for this, it is rigged to funnel heavy funding to the settlement enterprise in the West Bank. You look at who holds the key ministries from this standpoint. Yes, Yair Lapid is Minister of Finance. He's not committed to the settler issue, but his political ally is Naftali Bennett, and he's not active on the Palestinian issue. This is not a big deal for him. Even the head of the opposition, the Labor Party, Shelly Yachimovich, campaigned with the settlers and didn't make this a big issue either on her platform, which featured social and economic issues. So, yes, we have a minister, Tzipi Livni, whose job will be to sit down with John Kerry and try to move ahead with the peace process. Netanyahu won't dare stop her. But if anything significant happens, you'll see the settler lobby come into gear. And I don't think anything Netanyahu said or did, anything that Obama said or did on this visit is going to deter them. I don't see it happening. And I don't see it, with all due respect to Obama's call to his student audience, for the public to exercise pressure on the government, I don't see it happening, because I looked at the results of the last election, where only 10% of the people voted for two parties, Hatnua and Meretz, that put the peace process and the two-state solution first. So bear in mind, there is a ferocious settler lobby which sees itself as having succeeded, in which it's the new goal it's setting itself. This is what Bennett said, is a million Israelis in the West Bank. They all agreed there won't be any settlement building while Obama visits. I assume they'll maintain that little freeze until Kerry goes home as well. But after that, you can expect new settlement starts. Peace Now will have its work cut out to keep track of them. And yes, this is an issue that should then be laid on Obama's agenda by the American public. You went there, you talked, you did this, you talked the peace, you walked and talked the peace process. Now look what's happening.
I have a question. Can you hear me?
Yes, please go ahead.
This is Marianne Stein. Hi, Yossi.
Hi.
If you said something about this, I'm sorry, I had to go off for a minute. What's your theory about what's going to happen with E1?
It's very interesting. Abu Mazen yesterday in Ramallah said, or was alleged to have said, was quoted saying, I won't go back to the UN unless Netanyahu begins building an E1. In other words, linking the two. Now, my own sense is that Netanyahu never really intended to build on E1. He pulled this out as quote-unquote punishment for Abu Mazen having gone to the UN. And he can now sit back and say, well, I've deterred him from going again, and I just have to keep this as a threat and not actually begin building. If Israel begins building on E1, it will be a major international crisis, and I think it will bring Israeli-American relations very quickly into crisis and be seen by Obama and Kerry as a genuine, worse than a slap in the face, a spit in the face by Netanyahu. So I don't think he'll do it. I think even if Abu Mazen goes to the UN, he won't do it. But it seems to me Netanyahu understands this is very useful as a threat in terms of his value system of how you deal with the Palestinians. But the minute you actually start building there, you're going to get into deep trouble internationally with the United States and with the European Union.
Do you have any indication that Obama spoke with Netanyahu about E1? Has given him previously.
I don't. Nothing has been leaked to the credit of all the parties. Nothing has been leaked about what they talked about in closed sessions. We have only the remark made by Abu Mazen. But I think that it's an interesting remark. If indeed he made it, it's an interesting remark because, as I said, I don't think Netanyahu intended to do this. But I have Tzipi Livni was involved in some of the talks when they got to the Palestinian issue, not on the Iran issue or the Syria issue. I have no doubt that Obama touched all the bases on this. It was also very interesting, just if you go back and look at the press conference that they held on Wednesday night, Netanyahu opened and he said, "We discussed Iran, Syria, and the Palestinian issue." When it was Obama's turn to speak, he said, "We discussed the Palestinian issue, Syria, and Iran." He reversed the order. And very few things happened by accident in this visit. It was all very carefully choreographed. So it was a signal by Obama that it was a signal by Netanyahu that from the Israeli standpoint, Palestinian issue was third in importance. It was a single signal by Obama. I don't know if the Palestinian issue was the most important. Probably yes, because that's, after all, what he devoted the bulk of his speech to yesterday to those students, and that was that speech was billed as the, at least in public terms, the highlight of the visit.
Yossi, on the as I read the original coalition agreement between Livni and Netanyahu, what I understood that Netanyahu was going to keep his thumb firmly on Livni. Is that how you read it?
I'm sorry, repeat that. He was going to do what?
Use his thumb on Livni to control very carefully what she would negotiate on or not. That it was...
Oh, no. Everyone reads it this way. She whatever she does in terms of negotiations has to be coordinated with the prime minister. She doesn't in any way deny that. I mean, it's inconceivable that it would be any different than that. Bear in mind that Netanyahu very hastily brought Livni in my view, in order to send a signal to Obama, you want me to take the Palestinian issue more seriously this time around? Here I'm doing it. But he then faced demands by Bennett of the Jewish Home that as a coalition, as a condition of Bennett and Lapid joining the coalition, that agreement with Livni had to be torn up. And Netanyahu refused. He refused because he understood that if he tore up that agreement, it would be very hard. The Obama visit would be extremely problematic and extremely difficult to deal with. Okay, now the Obama visit's over. Bennett basically says if Livni wants to negotiate a two-state solution, as long as she's just negotiating, we settlers or settler supporters, we of the far right, we don't believe that she can succeed anyway. So as long as she's negotiating and not succeeding, we don't have a problem. Now, it's possible that she, with Netanyahu's agreement, will reach some achievement that will cause a coalition crisis. It's also possible that she will feel she can reach an agreement, but Netanyahu, to save his coalition, will not give her the green light. And that will cause a different coalition crisis, because she'll get up and say, I'm taking Hatnua out of the coalition, which leaves Netanyahu with a 62 majority out of 120 and makes him extremely vulnerable to all kinds of political blackmail that could destabilize his government. So it's typical of Netanyahu that he's a superb political negotiator and maneuverer, and he put together a government in which he has both Livni and Bennett. Even though, in terms of what they're all about, these people are going in totally different directions. How he's going to manage this, if indeed something substantive happens, and it's a big if, because that depends a lot on the Palestinians, and depends a lot on the United States, a lot on the international community, and a lot of all these other on all these other crises around us. But if indeed something substantive happens, it will be very interesting to see how Netanyahu manages this. Now you have Shelly Yachimovich from Labor, who says, don't worry, if Netanyahu needs more votes on an agreement with the Palestinians, Labor will join the coalition or support him from outside the coalition, so he can say, let Bennett go and still somehow manage. But Netanyahu has within his own party at least one-third of the members of Knesset are right religious and extreme. And they will not tolerate any real progress by Livni either. So Livni has a pretty thankless task, and Netanyahu has a coalition which could be in serious trouble if indeed there is any real progress on the Palestinian issue. And once again, I want to reemphasize with you, the Palestinian issue was the key campaign issue for only 10% of this Knesset. And the other 90% campaigned on either the Arab parties campaigning on a much more extreme position on the Palestinian issue, or the Arab parties do not back Israel as a Jewish state, or a Lapid, Labor, Bennett, all focusing on social economic issues and burden sharing, meaning focusing on the future need for integration of the Haredim, the ultra-Orthodox, into Israeli society.
So what room does Kerry have to maneuver at all?
Look, you know, my sense is, I mean, if you noticed, Obama made no concrete proposal whatsoever. None. He explained to us why we need a two-state solution. He explained it beautifully. And he said, it's up to you. What kind of country do you want to have? He then said, I could turn my back on this, but I don't want to. But he didn't volunteer any program. On the Iran issue, he has a program. On Syria, he has a program. He wants Israel to follow suit. But here he didn't. If, as I understand it, Kerry is thinks he wants to have a try. He thinks he can do something that his predecessors either didn't want to do or didn't succeed in doing, in some cases with a much more, much easier Israeli government. I'm thinking of Condi Rice with Ehud Olmert and Abu Mazen under George W. Bush. They made a lot of progress, and they still didn't succeed. What Kerry's going to propose, I don't know. My hope is that he won't just say, okay, folks, here's the Oslo menu for final status issues. Sit down at the table and negotiate. Because that won't work anymore. In fact, it hasn't worked for 20 years. My hope is he'll come up with something more innovative that looks at this as a process that has to be handled step by step. He might have an easier time with Netanyahu on that if it's step by step. He might have a harder time with Abu Mazen on that because the Palestinians remain very suspicious of step-by-step and because the Palestinian polity is so divided and schismatic. It'll be interesting. I mean, I'll be happy to rejoin this conversation if and when we have something concrete from Kerry and we know what the Americans are actually putting on the table, if anything. If anything, and it's possible Kerry will be much more cautious than the signals we've been getting so far. Let me add one other point.
Yeah, go ahead, Yossi.
Ori, just one other point. I mean, sure. I want to leave you with this. I opened with it. I want to leave you with this. The most burning issue on the table in the last 3 days was Syria. Syria is exploding and imploding. And this could have far-reaching ramifications for all of us in the broader Levant region of the Middle East that will at least temporarily dwarf the Palestinian issue because they bring in Jordan, they bring in Lebanon, they bring in Iraq, and they bring in Israel. And Israel is now on high alert lest Salafi revolutionary elements in Syria who are taking over border villages on the Golan border with Syria, lest they begin doing what their ideology tells them to do, which is not just to get rid of Bashar Assad, the Alawite, but to destroy Israel and attack Israel. And there's a lot of weaponry around there. And so this is an extremely serious issue. This is why the breakthrough with Turkey is so important. I think it's why the Turks agreed to it and why Netanyahu agreed to it. This will help deal with some of these issues. But I just want to point out, don't be surprised if in the months ahead these issues so overwhelm us that they push the Palestinian question at least temporarily to the back burner. They could even push the Iranian nuclear question to the back burner, although there's obviously an Iranian dimension to what happens in Syria as well.
Good. Yossi, thank you very much. We have long passed the 45-minute mark, which I promised that we won't. So I really thank you for bearing with us and staying, giving us the extra time. I would like to just a few quick comments before I let you all go. One is stay tuned for our invitation for a briefing call with Dror Moreh, the director of the Gatekeepers. That will probably be the week after next, toward the end of that week, either Thursday or Friday, but we're still not quite sure of the date. I would invite you all to read today's edition of NewsNosh, and if you're not subscribed to it, to subscribe. NewsNosh is our daily review of the Israeli press, and today it's chock full of interesting reviews and analysis of how the Israeli media reacted to President Obama's speech. And I have to say, it's heartwarming. And on a quick personal note, I was really, really touched yesterday as an Israeli with President Obama's speech and with the reaction of the crowd, including both people who were handpicked, but also students who were picked by student councils in Israel, who came there, not all of them, knee-jerk supporters of Obama's message, and still the reaction was very supportive and very warm. There's a lot of resources on Obama's visit on our website, which you're invited to look at. I'd like to wish you all a happy Passover, and join us soon for another briefing call. That concludes today's call, and thank you very much for participating. Yossi, thank you very much again for joining us. Happy Passover.
My pleasure, and let me add my wishes for Chag Sameach for everyone.
Chag Sameach to you, too.